Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Any artist can tell you that sometimes inspiration and creativity comes from the strangest of places. Of course, talent is often God-given, but cultivating and perfecting that craft into something much more is something that often falls on the shoulders of really great teachers who give us the tricks of the trade and help provide the key to unlock our true potential. We've all had at least one great teacher who has changed our lives and perhaps altered the course of it forever. And this is most certainly true for my next guest, Easton, Maryland-based filmmaker Cecily Davis. We first met Cece last year as her short musical film Jolene was set to debut at the Chesapeake Film Festival.
I found myself face down in a ditch with pools in my hair and blood on my lips.
Now Cecily Davis is trying to raise money via crowdsourcing for her new film, which will tell the story of her biggest inspiration, a former teacher of hers called David Robson, whose story, she says, the world needs to hear. Cecily Davis joins me now here at the Park Recording Studio in Ocean City. Cece, so nice to see you again.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So I really, just to start off with, really enjoyed Jolene.
Thank you.
Looking forward to the next project and the next film, which apparently this is it.
Yeah.
Tell us who David Robson is and why does the world need to know about his story?
David Robson is an amazing man, and kind of the impetus for this is that I can't remember that much about him. All I remember is my experience, and you know, I have little recollections here and there, stories he would tell about his life in London in the 60s and 70s and 80s, working as an actor and a director with amazing people, all names you would recognize, such as Ian McKellen, Judi Dench. I mean, those two names alone are huge and recognizable, and he was among their peers and advisor, and he worked with them as an actor and a director.
Wow.
And the thing that really made me want to make this film is that my recollection isn't good enough, and when you Google his name, there's no result.
Wow.
So I think David deserves one, and all of my classmates and former alumni of my school agree.
So the strategy, I guess, for this film is to raise the money so you can travel to England to attend his memorial. He passed away from cancer. Tell me what you're hoping to do once you raise the money and hopefully get to London.
Once I get to London, I already have set up a contact at the BBC, and I'm going to go through their video archives as well as their print archives looking for reviews and hopefully some footage of him actually performing. Mm-hmm. At his memorial, there will be his fellow classmates as well as numerous, I mean, we're talking like hundreds and hundreds of students whose lives he really affected.
Yeah. For you, what was it about this teacher that I guess stands out for you the most? I mean, we've all had teachers that were like, wow, that was a great teacher. I really enjoyed their class. But there's always that one teacher that really changed your life, as I said in the beginning of this. Was David Robson that teacher for you? And what was it about him that essentially changed your life and put you on this path of being an artist and a filmmaker?
It was quite an evolution getting to the point where I decided I really wanted to be a director and behind the scenes and not on the stage. So very early in my career, and especially in my college career, I studied acting. And David was the teacher that gave me that moment of understanding, that moment where everything clicked and I understood the craft of acting, how much you have to devote yourself to it, what it takes, the concentration, the focus, the passion. And I remember it so clearly. He loved Tennessee Williams, and we were doing a Tennessee Williams play. And I remember sitting on stage in front of, I think, about 150 people and seeing him in the audience and yet not seeing him at the same time. I saw him through the eyes of my character, and it just clicked, and it was amazing.
How long had it been since you had had contact with David Robson? And then when you learned of his passing, I guess how long after that did you realize that this film had to be made?
Well, David and I actually kept in pretty close contact through Facebook, emails, and letters. And he was a great music lover, so he would send me songs on Spotify, and I would send him playlists back. And then suddenly they stopped. It kind of slipped under my radar for a while, and then suddenly I had this moment where I was like, wait a minute, I haven't gotten a song from David in a while. I wonder what's happening. So I checked his Facebook page and learned of his passing, and it was so devastating. I was telling my boyfriend about my grief, about how much David meant to me, And I was like, let's Google him. Let's read his biography. That'll give me some kind of catharsis. And when I Googled his name, nothing came up.
Wow. So is this film essentially trying to provide a legacy for your biggest inspiration?
Absolutely. When I moved home to the Eastern Shore, I really wanted to bring back with me what I had learned in England. And I'm lucky enough that through the Avalon Foundation where I work, I'm able to work with kids quite a lot and teach them acting, directing for film and theater. And I do an exercise with the kids, which we call the David exercise, because I can't remember the original name for it. But, you know, one of my students has now gone on to the Tisch School of Arts in New York and NYU. And, you know, she sent me an email recently, you know, can you go over that David exercise again for me? And that right there just tells me that David deserves a legacy. Mm-hmm. If Megan goes on to teach herself, you know, she's going to teach her kids the David exercise, and she needs to have some context for who this man was.
Yeah. You know, I was looking at your crowdsourcing page in which you're trying to raise the money, and we'll be putting a link to that on our website, wamucoast.org. You're very close. You're within $600 of reaching your goal to be able to travel over there with your cameras. You're not asking people to pay for the movie or the production. You're incurring that all on your own.
Yes.
You're just asking people to help essentially buy the plane ticket and the travel expenses. I think you have, what, 2 weeks left to go. As you get closer to that, and the anxiety of will I meet the goal, you know, ramps up a bit. What excites you the most about the idea of going to London and meeting, you know, the inner circle of a man that you, you know, hold so highly?
I'm just excited to hear the stories. I can't wait to hear the firsthand accounts, because I know that that's what's so special for me are my memories and the stories I can tell about David. And I can't wait to hear everyone else's. The other thing that's really exciting is before David died, he requested that certain actors perform certain scenes from his favorite plays at his memorial. So I think that's another special little twist that will go into the film. I'm kind of on the fence right now about how I'm actually going to execute this film. I kind of want to tell it from my perspective and my journey finding David. But also, I think there's a greater theme here about how important teachers are and how much they change people's lives.
Yeah. As you look back on your own life and then you start looking at your own work, you know, let's just look at Jolene, for instance. I mean, as you watch that film now, I'm sure you find little idiosyncratic things that you would do differently, you know, had you been shooting yesterday.
Absolutely.
Or today, you know. Is there a thread of David's inspiration or his teachings in Jolene?
Absolutely. And it really comes down to people that are involved in theater, film, YouTube videos, whatever the medium. We're storytellers. We tell a story, and the story has to be truthful. The characters have to be truthful. The emotions have to be real. And that's how you connect with your audience. And that's something I learned very early on from David and has really carried through my whole career.
Yeah. You know, you hear all the time about teachers being unsung heroes, so to speak, and not getting the credit for enabling children or even young adults to feel like they could move a mountain or achieve greatness. Do you think that if people watch this, even if they've never met David Robson or never, you know, even taken up acting, that they'll watch this and have a connection with a teacher that meant something to them in their own life?
Absolutely. I think that is the idea. And what I found is that teachers have such a subtle impact, mm-hmm. because you feel like it's an everyday thing. You go to school, you learn, and it becomes so part of your routine that eventually that slow burn kind of, it comes like an epiphany. At some moment later in your life, you're like, oh my gosh, I learned this from this person and now I'm passing it on to someone else. And that's when the light bulb goes off and you realize how important that person really was.
Yeah. You're hoping to go there in middle of June. How long will you be there? How long is the shoot for this, so to speak?
I'm going to go for a week and hopefully get everything done that I can. I have a good group of people in London waiting for me, a little team. As soon as I put this out on the internet, I got such a big response from almost everyone I know in London saying, how can I help? How can I help?
Sure.
And luckily, we're all actors, producers, writers, directors. So. Mm-hmm. hopefully this thing will turn out pretty great and I'm going to have a lot of help doing it.
So you're going to release it kind of as an online film, kind of as an indie, you know, just release it to the interweb, so to speak.
Exactly. And I'm hoping for a screening, especially somewhere on the Eastern Shore, just because of the donations and the kindness. I've received so much already and so much support. And I really want those people to have a special screening. But yes, it is designed for the internet.
We've been speaking with Cecily Davis. She's a filmmaker. She's trying to raise funds for her next project, the telling of the story of one of her biggest inspirations, a former teacher, David Robson. Cece, always nice to see you, and best of luck.
Thank you so much, Brian.
I'm on my way. I'm on my way. I'm on my way.
We close today's show with the Elsie Diaries, our monthly series featuring the Johnson family of Oxford, Maryland. We met Richard and Jessica Johnson last year when they were planning a year-long sailing expedition on board their catamaran, Elsie. Since then, they've sent us back audio from their travels as they journey south, from the Eastern Shore, down the East Coast, and through the Caribbean. This time we'll tag along as they visit the islands of Bonaire and Cuna and prepare to cross the Panama Canal into the Pacific Ocean.
Hello, this is Richard on Elsie. We are just departing Grenada and heading across the southern Caribbean for Panama. We have planned stops in Bonaire and in Cartagena. We're downwind and will be for the next 1,000 miles.
So I'm in Kralendijk, Bonaire, and I'm in the tourism office, and I came here because I was very curious about a local language that is spoken here called Papiamento. So I'm here and I'm speaking with...
My name is Helen Todet. I'm the secretary of the Tourism Corporation Bonaire.
And Helen, as I'm walking around by restaurants and in shops, I hear people speaking a language that I can't understand. Can you tell me a little bit about Papiamento?
Yes, Papiamento is a language originated from the Indians, who was the first inhabitants of Bonaire. And by then, the slaves came in, and after that, we got more colonized with the Dutch people, Spanish, Portuguese, and also Italian. So Papiamento, it's a mixture of all those languages.
So many people in Bonaire, by the time they are an adult, speak several languages.
Exactly. Most people on the island do speak Papiamento, Dutch, English, Spanish, some of them Portuguese, Italian. So it's a whole mixture of all nationalities.
That's really good for the kids to learn so many languages at such a young age. Can you just speak a little bit of Papiamento for me so you know what it sounds like?
Yes, I will. Bon dia, conta bai, amita bon, mita spera, ko abota mita bon.
And what did you say?
Good morning. I hope you are okay. I'm okay, so I wish you were also okay.
Oh, thank you very much, Helen. It was great talking to you.
And thanks to you also.
So we've anchored Elsie off of a small island that has a village on it, and I'm going to do my best to pronounce the name. It looks like Wichibuhuala, and the village is... It's pretty amazing to look at because the houses are built on, many of them are built on stilts out over the water. You can't even see land other than, you know, there are a few palm trees and a few trees sticking up inside of the island. And we're going to go ashore and try and buy some molas, which are the beautiful applique fabric decorative pieces that the Kuna women make. And just also just have a look around. The huts are really amazing. They're just completely put together of all natural materials, but then some of them have long bamboo poles out the top with TV antennas. So one thing that strikes you as you walk through the village is there's not a lot of privacy for anyone. The families are pretty much living very closely together next to other families. The huts are open and Everyone's just going about their day-to-day business. Every boat under 65 feet that goes through the Panama Canal needs an advisor on board. And our advisor today is named Omar Latif. And at some point, I'm going to try and catch him and ask him a few questions. So I'm talking to Omar, who is our advisor for our transit through the Panama Canal. And Omar has been an advisor for 8 years. And how much training is involved in becoming an advisor?
3 months. 3 months to we receive training to be advisor.
About how many boats have you taken through the Panama Canal?
I don't know. In 8 years, I don't know.
More than 100?
Yes.
Wait.
Yes, well, more than 200, I think. Than maybe 300, maybe more than 300. You can calculate that. It's more or less a two per week.
Two per week, okay. So. Two boats a week. And how about, I wondered about, there's so many boats coming through from different countries, and sometimes the language is a difficulty?
It's not commonly, but sometimes, yes. Sometimes the skipper doesn't speak English, doesn't speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. So we have to communicate with the hands.
Yeah.
So it's not the best way, you know, but we do the job.
Yeah.
We're in the first lock right now. We're behind a boat called the Pacific Reefer. It's probably a 800-foot freighter, and we have a small yacht on either side of us, so we're the middle boat. And let me say, it is hectic. We are driving for all three boats, and or Elsie is. We're the middle boat, and it is, we are as wide as we are long right now. We have about 20 feet on either side of the boat, and but anyway, we're locking up right now.
Here's one out.
I'm gonna go that way
now,
then.
Reverse. Everybody reverse.
So the gate stuck open, and we're not able to move into the lock. So it's a little bit exciting at the moment.
Everybody reverse.
All three boats rafted together, trying to quickly reverse
everybody
back
reverse,
out of the lock. We just passed a large car carrier, and there's probably another ship not too far around the bend. There's so much large shipping traffic through the canal, pretty much one ship coming about every 10 minutes. And we have an advisor on board, and he makes sure that we are staying to the right and out of the way of the ships, and so we don't impede their passage. When we get the go-ahead from our advisor, the line handlers up on the sides of the lock will drop our dock lines, our long lines, back down. We take them back aboard, and we motor ahead, all rafted together, all three boats rafted together, to the next set of locks, where there are actually two more that we have to go down to get into the Pacific side. We've just come out of the last lock, and we've unrafted from the other two boats, and we're in the Pacific Ocean.
That was Jessica and Richard Johnson of Oxford, Maryland. The story was produced by Coastal Connections' Tara Boyle, and you can find links to the previous stories in this series at our website, wamucoast.org. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connections.